In my sermons, I usually like to touch briefly on three things. One is a little bit of history or context about the reading. One is about how I think it's pertinent to our lives today. And I'd like to end by helping to sort out, okay, what's the good news in all of this? Because that's what gospel, the word gospel means, good news. Sometimes you have to dig a little bit deep to find where's the good news in all this. As many of you know, in the Revised Common Lectionary, it's divided into years A, B, and C. And year A is usually devoted to Matthew's gospel. So for the rest of this year, we will be studying from the gospel of Matthew. So I'd like to focus my comments a little bit about the gospel of Matthew and about our particular reading. The reason is that I believe the author of Matthew is making a very strategic case for who Jesus is right from the very beginning of his gospel. In general, I want to talk about how he's making that case. It's important to remember who he was writing for. He was writing for Jews, and he was writing around 70 AD, so about 40 years after Jesus had died, 40 to 50 years. And he's probably writing at a time of great upheaval. The destruction of the Jerusalem temple would have happened right around the time, either slightly before or slight after this writing. So trouble was in the air as he's writing. And he's trying to make a case to help us understand that he views Jesus as the new Moses. Okay, so he's wanting to draw this line that helps us see for the people of Israel, Jesus is going to be the new liberator. Okay, so he starts with a genealogy. Now, note to all of us, if you're going to write a book, do not start with a genealogy. Puts everyone to sleep before the first three pages. But this is what he starts with. And I didn't go back that far this morning. I didn't want you all to have a second nap. But in Matthew and Luke both have a genealogy, but they're different, interestingly. So Matthew's list starts with Abraham, goes to King David, and then goes to Jesus. And there's a summary, to a symmetry to his genealogy. There's 14 generations from Abraham to King David, 14 generations from David to the diaspora in Babylon, and 14 more generations to Jesus. So there's this kind of symmetry. Why is this important? I think there's two reasons. One is he's really wanting to establish Jesus as being in the part of the tree of Jesse, aligning him with King David. Why is that important? Well, the times when King David ruled were seen as the best of times, right? They're living in the worst of times. The Roman occupation is just getting more and more severe. Taxes are getting higher and higher. So he wants to inspire his listeners that the fact that with Jesus, we're moving back to this time of the second King David. And one of our own is on the throne, right? David is a Jew. He's faithful to the God of Israel. And between King David and Jesus, there were 600 years of other people occupying Palestine, Israel. So they were very excited to hear that the good old days were coming back because the Messiah, Jesus, is going to be like King David. So that's one of the reasons why it's really important. But he also links Jesus to Moses, and he does this in a couple different ways. Both of the stories have an evil ruler, right? King Herod. So it's Pharaoh in the Moses story, and it's King Herod in this story. And the story is told very much kind of in a similar vein. So you have the evil one who's going to kill all the newborn Israelite males. Then through divine protection, Moses is saved and Jesus is saved, right? So you have this divine protection. And the Moses story, Moses goes to Mount Sinai and receives the Pentateuch, which are the five books, first books of the Hebrew Bible. Joseph receives these five instructions or five inspirations or five dreams. So he's told to take Mary as his wife. He tells the Magi not to go back to Herod. He tells Joseph to take the child to Egypt. Then he tells him to take it back to Israel. And then he specifies not to Judea, but to Galilee. So there's this sense of fives going through that to the Hebrew readers would certainly sound or remind them of this very similar story, the very similar stories about Moses. And who is Moses? He was the great liberator. And what were the people longing for? Liberation. So this is the way that Matthew frames the whole gospel really helps us understand what he was trying to say to the people who he was talking to. Jesus is our hope. Jesus is our new King David. The glory days are coming again, and Jesus is our new liberator. He's our new Moses. So he's really linking, this author is really linking everything about Jesus back to the true center of the Jewish faith. So you might ask, as we read this in 2019, why is this important to us? How does this reading actually help us live our lives? I think what's actually miraculous about this story is about the willingness of Joseph to act on intuition, dream, or direction from God, and to do things that would be out of keeping with his cultural norms. Based on a dream, he's asked to put aside convention and marry someone who's expecting a child. As an upstanding Jewish man, he would not be required to do this. Furthermore, he's asked to forgo his right to name the child that he's supposed to be taking in, which was a very important right of Jewish fathers. Then he's asked to relocate his family to a foreign country, disrupting all of their lives, living amongst not the Israelites, but living amongst the pagans, and to losing sense of family and community. Historians speculate that according to the story and the timing, they probably lived in Egypt between 3 and 5 years. Then, in another dream, he's asked to return, take the family back to the land of Israel, but not to where they had been before, but to this new area, this backwater, right? The Galilee was the backwater. So based on inner promptings, based on intuition, based on dream, he's willing to be a refugee, to travel in Roman-occupied Palestine, to take a lot of risks. And so today's reading is really telling us about Joseph's response to God's invitation. It gives us an example of what it's like to be a willing participant with God. The scriptures are filled with stories of ordinary people being asked to do uncomfortable or unconventional things. From Moses to Daniel, Hebrew scriptures talk about many people doing specific things for God. Many of them seem to violate their cultural norms, and they're doing something that could be even considered embarrassing. Just for starters, Abraham's initial instruction is to kill his son Isaac, right? That's way off the chart as far as Jewish cultural norms. Figures in the New Testament are asked to do the same thing, difficult and embarrassing things that are not in keeping with their tradition, like eating with Gentiles or turning the other cheek. So how can we use Joseph's experience to help us live in a way that allows us to follow what God is inviting us to do? For God is always asking us to do things that are uncomfortable or out of our comfort zone or sometimes embarrassing. And as you reflect on 2019, the year that's closing, let yourself notice what are the things that you've been asked to do or the places that you've been pushed out of your comfort zone to do something that God has suggested or encouraged you to do. In Hawaii, we have a concept called kuleana, and a kuleana is the sacred responsibility to care for something. Now, Joseph is given a big kuleana, but what sacred responsibilities have been on your plate this year? One of mine has been to help create a retreat center over at the Kalapapa National Historic Park on the island of Molokai that honors those exiled because of Hansen's disease or leprosy. This was not something I ever thought I would be doing. It started as a casual inquiry. Would you be willing to co-lead a spiritual retreat over at Kalapapa? I had visited Kalapapa a few times on day trips, and I found it to be very inspiring. So I said yes, never thinking anything else would happen from there. While I was there, I remarked to the minister that the church and the social hall would make a wonderful place for a retreat center. And he immediately said, yes, I've been having that dream for the longest time. You're the first person who's really said something like that. And our other co-facilitator chimed in and said, yes, I've been wondering about this also. Within 6 months of our common declaration of purpose, we had written a grant, raised $20,000 for renovations, and gotten approval from the larger church body to proceed, as well as the National Park Service. I consider this a miracle. It's something I felt asked to do, prompted to do, urged to do, that I really had no particular interest in doing in that kind of a big way. And the miracle is, you know, the church, the national park, everything is, this grant, everything is falling in place. And it happened when God had collected three willing participants who didn't necessarily know any better and said, okay, I'm willing, I'll do this. There are other contemporary examples of common people being called out of their comfort zone. Think of young Greta, the environmental activist, who will be on the cover of Time magazine as the person of the year. It came to her that she needed to go on strike for the planet and its health, and she decided to miss school every Friday. Now, this certainly wasn't good for her grades or getting into the right college. Her acts were uncomfortable to some and not understood by everyone else. And those Fridays that she was at home, she didn't stay at home and talk on the phone or play video games or go to the movies. She stood outside to protest our treatment of creation and to take a stand to preserve the climate that supports all of our lives here on Earth. For a person with Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autopsy, none of this attention could have been easy. Nor was it easy for her to stand up and address the United Nations. And yet, her simple yes to the prompting of her inner wisdom or higher power has begun to change the conversation. In the same way that the youth at Parkland High School began to change the conversation about access to assault-style weapons. So as with God's request to Joseph, or these contemporary examples, being willing participants with God and God's plan for bringing about the peaceable kingdom is not easy or comfortable. So I ask again, what are the past or current ways that God is asking you to step out of your comfort zone? Who are you asked to include that you might prefer not to? Who are you asked to speak up for? Who can't speak for themselves? What have been the things that you've been asked to do that initially felt uncomfortable or impossible? And what have your responses sounded like when God has been knocking on your door? Even though many of the things I've been asked to do or prompted to do turned out to be great blessings, at the time I was asked, my response often sounded more like, I really don't want to do that. Do I have to? But I did. I stood up and did it. The good news in this reading, to me, is a reminder that God needs all of us. Just like God needed Joseph, God is asking things of all of us. And God uses Joseph and Greta and me and you to tikkun olam, which is a Hebrew word that means repairing or rebuilding the world. We are all given a sacred responsibility to care for or care about the community of life that we're part of. And we have a choice in how to respond to these requests. And Joseph is giving us an example of one response. Some things God asks are small, some are really large, but all have to do with rebuilding the world. And I know God is asking something of you. Do you know what it is? If you don't, this is a really important thing to take to prayer. That thing being asked of you is your opportunity to be a willing participant in an invitation from God that might hasten God's reign of peace on earth. So as you're thinking of those New Year's resolutions this week, I'd encourage you to add participating in God's adventures to your list of resolutions. You never know how one small action on your part might impact the lives of others, as God is calling all of us to welcome Emmanuel, to welcome God's presence with us right now. Amen.